Tonight, Pretty Late favorite Todd Belcour rides sidecar for the first hour. Then later, we'll talk Cubs and Bears with Mark Carmen. And finally, comedian Michael Palasek will help close the show. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is Wednesday, September 21st, and this has been a heavy week. I know that we've been having conversations. You know, we're having them here on the air. People are having them online, in their homes, at work, in restaurants. And look, racism in the United States has come to a point where we feel like we have come so far, and I've heard words like race war, but who feels like they're at war, or who feels like they're being attacked is really an important question here, because I think that both sides feel that way, and perhaps that's why we're not able to have a conversation. Our experiences are so different. When I'm driving, if I get pulled over, I generally believe, and I know I've joked about, I hope it's not for something else, but really I know it's because I didn't come to a complete stop or because I was going too quickly. I have never once in my entire life ever feared for my life. I was in a car with a friend of mine named Owen Smith, a fantastic stand-up comic who you've seen in a lot of ads. He's a writer on television, and he is a tall black man. And when he was pulled over, he got nervous because not only was he black in a white neighborhood, he had a white woman in the car, and he was very nervous. Fortunately, the only thing he laughed at was when the police officer walked up to the car and he said, "Are you Owen Smith?" Owen got very scared, and then he thought, oh, maybe he's seen me do stand-up comedy. And, of course, the police officer had run his plates, and I knew who he was. But that's a situation where before the police officer even came to the car, I saw Owen getting really nervous, not trying to figure out what he was going to say, to explain himself, why he was with me. I can't really even begin to put myself in that position. I think many of us, no one can put anybody in other people's shoes. We don't know what it's like to be a police officer who gets up in the morning or whatever time their shift starts, goes out to do a job, which is, you know, their intention is to serve and protect. It's in their title. And we don't know what that's like to walk up on a situation where there are so many unknowns, where they do want to go home. We all want them to go home at night. And we're at a place right now where I don't think anybody trusts each other. I just don't think people trust each other anymore, even in conversations. Joining me is adjunct professor of law at University of Chicago, Todd Belcour. He also has a film festival this weekend. He is the director of Social Change. And he's joining us. He came from an organized meeting.
That's right.
Is that the best way to put it?
I came from a community forum.
Community forum?
Yeah, at Trinity United Church of Christ. And the topic of discussion was exactly this. This is a critical situation. It's time that we come together and focus on solutions to solve this problem and stop spending as much energy talking, but more energy on actually creating the solutions and advocating for the solutions.
And when you say advocating, one of the things you told me about in the green room was a video that was an instructional video dedicated toward, it's called Get Home Safe. Right. So we always say that when it comes to police officers. Hey, we want them to come home safe. They have a dangerous job and we want them to get home safe. This is not for police officers.
No, there's actually a video that they've released, and it is called Get Home Safe. And the entire purpose is to make sure we're instructing individuals, particularly African-Americans, in terms of how they interact with police officers, with law enforcement. And really, the pastor really described it best after conclusion of the video by calling it a tragedy in and of itself to have to create it.
Right.
And because if you look at the 10 steps, the 10 rules that they provided to help guide people in terms of interaction with law enforcement, it's really a step-by-step tool to make sure that people are docile, aren't announcing their rights, aren't doing any things that any other folks have the opportunity to express and expect of themselves when they interact with law enforcement. So it was heartbreaking to see. But at the same time, the pastor was also right in saying, we can complain about the fact that it's heartbreaking that black people uniquely have to do this, but it behooves us to recognize this is a problem, and there's things we need to do in the meantime to really staunch the wound and stop the bleeding.
So to prevent more tragedies, but from what I understand, and none of us were there. The police officers and the man who was killed last night in Charlotte, North Carolina, are the only ones that will ever know what happened. Witnesses can say they saw whatever. They weren't the ones immediately involved in the exchange. And from what most of us understand, as opposed to what's going on in social media, speculations, but from what the reports are, he was not armed. He was in his car reading a book, waiting for his son.
Well, that's the thing. There's conflicting reports.
There are.
And that's why it's so important to have transparency as a modes of determining whether there's quality law enforcement interaction with the community. And that's why things like body cams are important, even though you may not necessarily get the accountability and the discipline on the back end. It's really important to know exactly what happened. So we don't have to get into he said, she said stuff
right.
that we really spend a lot of time on in the course of the actions. I mean, on its face, a gentleman who's reading a book waiting for his child to get home from school, there's no reason for an officer to be interacting with that individual. So I would like to have, just from a procedural standpoint, why are you approaching this gentleman in the first place, besides a black man being in the car? I mean, is the only threat, only crime that this individual is committing is just being black? And I think
and
that's
fitting a description, was there a call for somebody else?
There was a call and there was a warrant to be looking for an individual, but it didn't seem to be related to that vehicle. So all of it seemed to really cascade around just the whole notion of stereotyping and putting people in a profile that doesn't fit an individual father waiting on their child. So I think the fact that black people too frequently are seen as a threat just by virtue of being black for no other reason is something that's the biggest hurdle to overcome.
And let's put this so that people understand, you have family members who are in law enforcement and you also fight for social justice and you are passionate about making sure that people, one, know their rights, but are safe and have access to everything that as Americans we should uniformly have.
That's right. I have two police officers in my family that are immediate brothers and also a cousin. And all these issues and the violence and the community relations led me to form something called the Liberty Project, which is an aspect of social change. And what it is it's a project that's formed to elevate the conversations surrounding police and community relations that really recognize our common humanity, but also ensure that the perspectives and equitable solutions brought to bear by the community and otherwise are actually pushed and reflected in policy change. Because right now, we've had a lot of conversation about this over the last 2 years. It's not going to get better on its own. So what are we going to do to ensure that there's more transparency, more independence and community power and aspect of policing, and more accountability, more discipline? And that's what this campaign is directed around, and that's why we're excited to be a part of this movement, but sad that it's required in the first place.
We are talking to adjunct professor of law, Todd Belcour. He is at the University of Chicago. He is also the director of social change. They have a film festival this weekend, and this is really something that people can, really be immersed into a situation from different stories around the world.
That's right. That's the perfect word for it, actually, just immersion. I mean, the idea is we may hear about sex trafficking, we may hear about workers' rights issues, we may hear about gender equality issues, but until you actually get a chance to see that issue through the eyes of the person experiencing it, you don't feel compelled to really jump in the movement to get involved and do something about it. So what makes this festival unique is not only do we showcase world premieres from all over the world documenting these injustices, but we also provide individuals who see these films an opportunity to discuss the issues with filmmakers and advocates, and also action opportunities. So you see this, you're inspired, you want to get involved. Now's your chance to do something about it, because we have a lot of folks who are really good about discussing issues on Facebook and social media, but if we had just as many people who are fighting on the front lines, we'd have a lot more resolutions and a lot more addressing of these very critical issues.
Well, we know we won't resolve it tonight, but we hope that you are inspired to join our conversation. We are at 312-981-7200. What are you thinking tonight? Well, the last 2 years, we've had this conversation, and you mentioned 2 years ago, is that Ferguson, Missouri, and the protests that happened there. Is that, would you say that that's kind of what ignited so much of the conflict, I think, between... I don't know if Black Lives Matter started then.
I think the Trayvon Martin incident was really what brought the level of consciousness on a national level. And I think the actual Ferguson, the organizing, the protests is really how it really reached a fulcrum of we're here to stay. This isn't just something that we're going to just one-off complain about a particular issue or protest a particular issue. This is something that's going to be an ongoing protest, ongoing group of individuals who are willing to put their lives at stake to protest and be in the front lines. And getting there and make sure they're making a stand. And I think the fact that you have people who are protesting who are losing their lives in Charlotte is a sad occurrence. I mean, yes, there may be some dumpsters that are set on fire, but anytime you have people who will lose their lives for speaking out, I think that's the scariest thing you can have in American democratic society.
Well, there is a community that is in a state of emergency, and we are having the conversation here on WGN. 312-981-7200. More after this on 720. I just said that a moment ago. We are talking about the fatal shootings of two black men this week by law enforcement, one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and last night in Charlotte, North Carolina. Joining me is adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, Todd Belcour, who is also the director of Social Change. He has a film festival this weekend. Tell us again where the film festival is. We mentioned it before the break.
Absolutely. The film festival is at Showplace Icon, 150 West Roosevelt. It's one of the largest theaters in Chicago, and there's parking available. And we're showcasing films from all over the world, documenting different injustices. 35 films, different world premieres from over a dozen countries. And so we'd love for everyone to come out. It's a great time to just see some great films, meet some great people, have great discussion, and hopefully make some change.
I will be there on Sunday. There's so much we can learn from listening to each other's stories, from listening to each other's experiences. Social media has become this vacuum of, I unfriend people too when I see stuff that is just so belligerent, so angry, so hostile, this week it has not been quite the same because I think this is more vague. There hasn't been as much of he deserved it or he had. There was in Tulsa. I was listening to someone talk about how, saying, oh, well, he had PCP in the car. But they didn't know if there was, in fact, that wasn't something the police officers would have known. The same thing with Laquan McDonald, right? That was not something until the autopsy, if there was any drugs. Right. That's what would that be called? Post hoc? After the fact?
Yeah.
I'm asking a lawyer. No, you have to know all that Latin stuff.
I like what you're picking up over here.
It's after the fact, right? So they can't base what this guy seems juiced up. Well, that's not a reason to shoot and kill somebody.
Yeah, you can't create probable cause after the fact.
No? Oh, no. That seems dicey. So this is, again, there doesn't seem to be as much pushback, at least maybe I'm not following it, but you were mentioning before the show started, you're trying to find out what people are thinking when it comes to those who are resistant to the phrase Black Lives Matters. I was in Racine, Wisconsin tonight, and I drove through downtown Racine, and there was a huge banner that said, God loves all lives, right? To God, all lives matter. And I thought, well, yes. And I thought that was interesting as the first banner I saw on a church going into downtown. But two blocks down was another church that had a big banner, actually bigger banner, that said Black Lives Matter. And I thought, oh, now we are having a competition of banners in this downtown area, this really, kind of quiet community in Racine, Wisconsin. Perhaps I don't know Racine very well, but is there more than I know?
No, I'm not. Judging your knowledge of Racine, I'm sure you know more than you think you do.
I don't know.
But I think the whole notion that there's people competing over whose lives matter is part of the issue. I think both are true. I think God does love all our lives. But I think the people who love all lives should then also be the same people who come out to rallies for Black Lives Matter as well. Because the question is simple. I mean, do you think Black Lives Matter?
Yes.
Then why aren't you at the, not you personally,
I should go. No, I should go.
I'm saying these churches, I'm saying these individuals who say all lives matter, that's true. But then how do you show that? How do you express that? What sort of solidarity do you extend to the individuals who are feeling that they disproportionately feel like they can't get in their cars and drive somewhere? They disproportionately can't read a book in a car. They can't walk away with car trouble and make sure they can come back home safely. I mean, the notion that a church that has hundreds of thousands of people who follow it and pay attention to it, the Trinity United Church of Christ, has to create a film called Get Home Safe just to make sure people know how to do as little as possible to piss off police to make sure they can just get home to their families, irrespective of whether they're in PCP or doing nothing. I think that in itself is a tragedy that we should be talking about as well.
We are talking about all of this tonight. The conversation continues in just a little bit. We're going to take a break and then check in with Rob Martier in the news. We are with
Martier.
We are with adjunct professor of law. You can say hi, Rob.
How you guys doing?
Hello. And Esmeralda's there too.
I got to say hi now.
We jumped right into it.
He won't say hi to me later. He leaves too quickly.
We didn't say hi to anybody. We just jumped right into all the drama. Rob, we'd love to have you join the conversation if you have time.
I can get this kind of guilt at home, man.
Oh, all right then. We have some treats for you down here, Rob.
I love when Todd's here, though. Really do.
Well, I'm just saying there's treats down here. You should stop by on the way. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, making plans with the adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, Todd Belcour, to hang out in my neighborhood. I'm taking you to the 16th District tonight. We're gonna.
I feel honored to be invited. Thank you.
We're gonna go. I'm not sure which bar we're gonna go to, but there's a couple 4 a.m.s. You can go do that. Play some pool.
That was intended to remain off the
air.
Microphone.
Why? Yeah. Why is that? You can go home, go to bed. I don't care.
Well, I'm
there's
trying to build
that
my
stays off
Blue
the
Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter sort of union. So there's no.
Well, that's
way
why
to
you're coming to the 16th district.
There's
it's
no
a.
Way to
it's
do
a
it.
Neighborhood that is significantly white, and there's a lot of police officers, firefighters that live there. I grew up there, and. It was interesting as one of the few Mexicans in my grade school to I was in second grade. I was I often say second grade, but the truth of the matter is when I was 5 years old, a little boy across the table from me in Mrs. Hanneman's class, who was the kind of kid that picked his nose and ate his boogers. Looked at me
like
and
Jim Harbaugh
in a little bit. I didn't know that. Does he really?
The coach from Michigan. Yeah, we got all sorts of jokes for that.
That's really. I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, for people who can't see Patty, she doesn't look. You know, you'd think she was white. So you the classic just passing. So whatever this guy's about to say, it's going to even sound even more insensitive.
No, he just looked at me and sneered and said, "You're a chink." When I was 5 years old, and when I tell it on stage, for some reason I've made it 7 years old. I don't know why that makes it more palatable to an audience.
It hits a certain touch point in people's mind.
And
I had something traumatic at seven.
And at 5 years old, and I didn't know what that meant. I just knew that it was something he meant to hurt me with.
Right.
And, you know, whether or not it was accurate, the joke I've made as an adult, because I was the only Mexican in my school, as far as I knew, my mother was came here from Mexico, from Mexico City. She grew up in the northern part of Mexico. And when he called me that, I didn't even know it was meant to be mean. But the joke I've made as an adult is that I went home and I said, "Mommy, mommy, am I a chink?" And she said, "No, no, mija, you are a wetback, a beaner." And that's my way of humor has always been my way of dealing with it. Kids that used to bully me, one girl who used to really that held me down and hit me. My father ran into her, didn't know that she was one of my bullies, gave her my number as an adult. He's like, "Hey, I saw little Gina over at the Walgreens. I gave her your number." And Gina called me and she said, "I'm not surprised you're a comedian because no matter how mean we were to you, you were always smiling." That was the one
Is
thing.
Is that her way of apologizing?
And I think that that's, you know, when people say, "Why don't you do this?" or "Why don't you do that?" We all have our coping mechanisms. We all have our way. For me, it was always to not let them know that they could hurt me. They might be able to hurt me physically, but they weren't going to crush my spirit. I might go home and cry, but they weren't going to see it. And, you know, when people text things as they have tonight and say, "Why don't we see black on black crimes being protested?" Why is it always, "Why don't you do this? Why don't you react the way we want you to? Why aren't you doing the things that we find acceptable as a protest? Why are you kneeling during the national anthem but why are you just, there's, we have some sort of parameters by which you can show your disdain for something and you must follow that.
And the folly behind all of that is that's absolute frank denial of the fact that there are protests relating to black-on-black crime. And that's why the question becomes, if all lives matter, where are those same people when people are protesting those incidents as well? So I think the sad truth, and I, just to say it bluntly, I think all lives matter is, even though I believe in what it represents, I think the people who say it don't necessarily back it up with action in terms of making sure they're fighting for the people who are dealing with different issues disproportionately or who are losing loved ones. Via police violence or violence with other civilians, of where is your care, where is your compassion in those instances? And to your point about the whole notion of people not mourning or expressing protest in a way that's suitable, doing it the actual suitable means by approaching legislators, approaching your mayor and asking them to do something different has not worked. So that's why protest gets ratcheted up. It's always intended to be nonviolent, but you need to do more to disrupt the general function of society with the hope that you'll trigger enough people's emotions and get enough people to recognize that this is serious to you. If you're willing to be ridiculed by a nation for kneeling during a national anthem, if you're willing to stop traffic and risk your life as, you know, cars zoom by you, just so people can hopefully pay attention to the concerns of your community, then maybe you should probably pay attention and recognize that this person is really serious about what's going on, and maybe I should look at it from their perspective, or at least be willing to hear them out.
Let's hear out Don, who has another perspective that he wants to share with us on Black Lives Matter. Hey, Don, how are you doing?
How are you doing there?
We're doing
I just kind of sitting in there, and you're wondering why people get offended. Well, to me, when you when an organization comes out and says Black Lives Matter or Chinese Lives Matter or, you know, Polish Lives Matter, they become racist, because now what you're saying is affecting the rest of the group. And basically, what is that? That's racism. You're focusing in on your color or whatever. I mean, in this case, they're claiming that police departments are after Black people to kill them, you know, which is a narrative that I can accept and most of us cannot accept. I have a lot of police friends, and they're just torn up by this because the narrative is false. You know, they're not out to kill Black people. And, you know, the fact is white people get killed, Hispanics get killed in, you know, altercations with the cops. And, you know, so, I mean, the narrative is wrong. So to me, it's racist when you have a group that's called Black Lives Matter.
Don, I want to introduce you to Todd Belcour. He's the adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, and he also has family members who are in law enforcement. And he was nodding as you were talking and completely has, I think, you know, reflection.
Can I add one more thing about the Black Lives Matter?
Sure.
Of course. To a lot of people, it's not the representative core of the issue. They just happen to rise to the surface, and they stir up a lot of trouble. Like Ferguson, they burned a town down. Milwaukee, all of a sudden they show up, and they start burning the town down. And the Black businesses do not appreciate that, and you know that. They don't represent the Black community. They represent
When you say
their
they,
political
can you help me
agenda.
Better understand hold on, what hold on you a second, mean
Doug. By? What do you mean by they?
The Black Lives Matter group. They don't represent the entire Black community.
Okay, let Todd respond. One moment.
I think he's right. I mean, there is no monolith within any community, but the bottom line is that these issues happen disproportionately against one color of people, and that's people of color, that Black people. So I think it's worth mentioning, whether it be save the whales, it doesn't mean forget the dolphins, as you've mentioned before, when you say
Breast cancer awareness. You don't say forget all the other lung cancers or prostate cancer. Right.
We're bringing as much attention and exposure to an issue that's happening uniquely and disproportionately to a population that needs attention. So the point is that unless we start talking more about, rather than the legitimacy of Black Lives Matter, but actual the facts of which brings Black Lives Matter to fruition, it's harder for us to move on from it and actually get to the solutions. But I do agree with what he's saying, that at the end of the day, Don, you're right. I mean, there are people who try to co-opt movements. I mean, there are people who have been paid by different campaigns to make sure that they're misrepresenting different factions and make sure that they, you know, make it seem like, oh, look at those Bernie Sanders supporters or Trump supporters, they're all running afoul. But when you look deeper, you see, well, those people actually aren't affiliating and don't actually aren't quote-unquote card-carrying members of the organization that they're purported to represent. So what I would implore you to do, like I implore myself to do, is to look deeper than just the actions of the people who are on the outside or fringes of whatever movement and think to the actual core of what the movement represents and see if you can support that. And I think as it relates to Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, I agree both matter. But what are we going to do to solve this problem? Is we have to admit at a very minimum that there's a problem. We can do better as a country.
Yeah. I think a lot of these altercations could have been prevented if people would just respect law enforcement.
Don,
you know, when you pull a gun out in front of a cop, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, none of these, you know? in both of these situations this week, that did not happen.
Well, the one they claim it did in the Carolinas, they claim they have citizens, you know, corroborating the story on the police side that he did have a weapon and pointed it at the cops. You know, but that's another thing. So then the narrative goes in the news. What you're going to hear is you're not going to hear that right away. You're going to hear this narrative because it sells papers.
In what news? Know? Because I don't think WGN has reported that either side of that Black.
No, the last report you had said that the family members say no, he was holding a book.
Right. So their report is the family member said. They didn't report it as this is the absolute final answer, because that's going to come.
The story is out there. I didn't hear it reported on GN that
Here, hold on a second, Don. We have our newsman. Don, we have newsman Rob Martier.
Yeah, I've been reporting both sides of the story, Don. I've been saying that the family insists that it was a book. That has not been confirmed, nor has the other side of the story that police say he was carrying a gun been confirmed. However, a television station, Channel 9 in Charlotte, North Carolina, says that a source is telling them that a dash cam video shows Scott getting out of the vehicle with a gun. Again, none of this has been confirmed. I'm only going on what's being filtered through to me.
Well, you know, what might help also on this thing nationally is pull up a couple of white guys who were probably killed this week by cops in altercations, because it happens every week. And it has been going on ever since the country's been around. It's just now it's an issue. We're trying to go back to a time when there was, you know, state-run racism, you know, and that era is gone. We're trying to bring this up again, and all we're doing is dividing the classes of people by the way we're reporting this and the way we're approaching this. Because if you look at the stats, and a black man did that a couple weeks back in university, and it came out there were more white people killed, okay, by cops every year. But the more black people pulled over, they're definitely higher rates of people being profiled. That's true.
Please allow
to stop profiling.
Don, please allow Todd to... No.
I think what you're saying is completely valid. I think at the end of the day, you see a lot of efforts by news organizations not entitled WGN, everyone but us, of course, are trying to make sure that the headlines grab people's attention such that they get clicks and the other attention. And there's no better source of attention than the sensationalism of racial conflict. So I do agree that just by virtue of the fact that it's a black individual and a white police officer, you'll get more attention to it just by virtue of that interaction, no matter what the outcome is. But I think at the end of the day, we do have to pay special attention to the disproportionate contact that law enforcement has with people of color and try to get to the bottom of whether or not we can figure out a better way of dealing with these issues rather than killing somebody. I mean, we've got people, you know, maybe not necessarily this situation, but it's more facts need to come out as it relates to Keith Lamont Scott. But you got Terrence Crutcher. I mean, that's an individual who's, you know, you're dealing with a car breaking down, and you've got someone who's being shot whose hands are up. I mean, there's got to be some universal outrage, no matter what your ethnicity is, what your background is, or support police officers as I do and you do, where you say, you know, that officer is wrong. Can you ever envision a situation where an officer is wrong? And if you can't get to that point, then that's the thing that I was challenging my brothers and my family members. For what it's worth, I'm half black and half white, and my officers who are my brothers are white. I'm saying you can't be so blind in supporting officers that you can't be acknowledging this is something that's blatantly wrong. And I say that for the black community that I represent, but also the white community I represent. Because until we can get to the point that we have a credibility of being accountable to our own race and our own individuals and our own groups, our own, you know, villages, we can't build a bond necessary to create change and do something better than what we're doing now.
Right.
And I think that's what everybody wants,
Thank
Don,
you.
Is to do better than we're doing now. Thank you, Don. Have a great night. Be safe.
Okay, you too, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you, Don.
More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Did we lose did we lose Renee, who said she had an experience? There was a caller who wanted to share an experience she had that made her understand things. There's Renee. You are listening Pretty Late. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio with adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, Todd Belcourt. He also has a film festival this week, an international film festival at the Icon Theaters at 150 West Roosevelt Road. I love when you're surprised by me.
I'm killing it today.
And he actually, before he came to the show tonight, he was at a community forum called Critical. That one I lost.
Situation Critical. Yeah, put together by the Cook County Bar Association, the Black Bar Association here in Cook County. And the idea is to discuss all the issues going on community-wide so people had a place not only to speak their issues but also speak solutions to the issues.
And one of the solutions they offered was a video on how to interact with police officers. Basically, you described it as an instructional video, a tutorial in docility. Now, listener Rich wants to join the conversation and wants to point something out. Rich, what did you want to tell us?
Yeah. Hey, Patty. I've listened to your shows since you've been on, and they're great. You always got good topics to make people think.
Thanks,
you know, I mean, I'm 60. I retired out of the military, so I don't see black, white, green, yellow, blue, or brown. I just see OD green, put it that way.
Okay.
But in driver's ed, which I got back in the 70s, that one of the big things they taught was if you're pulled over by a police officer, roll down your window and stay in your car. I mean... Picture yourself as an officer. He pulls somebody over for a reason. You know, he's walking into something that he doesn't know. You know, it's just like being in the military. You're going to go into a building. You don't know what's in there. If you see somebody coming at you, you take that as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just a person. You know, I think that's just a person's natural reflex.
Rich,
you know?
I want to, just for a moment, because there was something that bothered me years ago. I had a friend, let's call him Harris, because that was his name, Larney. And he was driving on Lakeshore Drive. He was driving a truck on Lakeshore Drive. Do you know much about Lakeshore Drive in Chicago?
Yes.
You cannot drive a truck on Lakeshore Drive. It's against the law. He was pulled over, and he got out of his car and approached the police officer. And the police officer told him to get back in his car, but nothing else happened to him. But I yelled at Harris because I said what you're saying. Do not get out of the car. Stay where you are. And that should be for everyone. However, Harris went home fine and safe because Harris grew up on the North Shore. He grew up in Evanston and in the community, you know, where that wasn't a big deal. He was entitled. He felt like it was okay for him to get out of the car. So there is a different experience. And when that happens, it's not always, you know, stay in your car. Some people can and some people can't. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I didn't mean to cut off Don, who had a comment to make. He had served in our military, and I didn't thank him for that first. I do thank you, and I just think that there are different situations. I mentioned something about my friend, let's call him Harris, who had jumped out of his car on Lakeshore Drive to approach a police officer, and he was scolded by the police officer, but that was the worst that happened. Todd Belcour, who has skin that is darker than mine. And has had similar situations where you get out of the car, don't you? Don't you just run up to the police officer and say, wait a minute, I didn't do anything wrong?
You know, I'm a lawyer and I stand petrified because I know at the basis of experience of everyday people, that just white people and black people are treated differently by police. I mean, I went to the school at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and I saw more criminal acts in white frats than any place I've ever seen on the south side of Chicago. But I also know that when the police approached and talked to the frat boys, it was more like friends and colleagues and, you know, ho-hum, chum-chum, rather than the way my friends and I were treated just for being in the vicinity of stuff that took place. And that's as simple as drinking and revelry. So I think that carries with you. So, I mean, the fact that a community of individuals has to create a film called Get Home Safe that no white person will ever have to concern themselves with is an issue. And I think it's worth acknowledging. I mean, at the very least, acknowledging that we can do better as a society than having people who are killed for the transgression of having a broke-down car or transgression of selling Lucy's in the street, cigarettes, or things that really should not amount to death. We have to find other ways to deal with these situations. I think one result of that is doing more transparency, doing more discipline. Because Dr. King said, the law can't keep a man from hating me, but it can keep him from lynching me. And I think that's pretty important. So law is a good step of it. And that's why we work for legislative reform, the Liberty Project.
Todd, I've been handed a text from the 630. This came in. The representative sounds like, I guess they think you're a representative, but you are an adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago and the director of social change with a film festival this weekend. I've been handed this, and it says that you are the most level-headed politician I've ever listened to. We need more like him. Do you ever think about running for public office?
Not a day. I mean, what I love doing is listening to people. And I think one of the things that we all miss from this is we're so quick, as you said earlier, to be defensive. If we take the time to take what people's experiences as truth and recognize the hurt and pain is not manufactured, that people really are scared to get in their cars and drive and be approached by a police officer, even if you just say, have a good day. I think that until we start to really attack that on its base, we can't really resolve the issue of the police community relations issues that's in the news every day.
Well, and the head of police has announced today, and Mayor Emanuel has announced that they're going to be hiring of 1,000 police officers. And in response to that, Ro Khan was talking about today, and he had the Fraternal Police Representative. I'm not sure if he's the head of it, but Dean Angelo Jr. was on the air. Senior was on the line today.
Chicago police over the next 2 years are going to put close to 1,000 sworn members onto the streets. That's at least the plan. And the head of the Fraternal Order of Police for Chicago, the lodge that represents the Chicago Police Department, Dean Angelo Sr., is joining us right now. And Dean, thank you, first of all, for being with us. And I know that your union has been asking for this for a number of years now, from a number of different superintendents of this administration, even the past administration in terms of the mayor. And now it's here. Your reaction?
Well, I'm not sure if a full 1,000 or 970 are going to be new bodies to the police force. Listening to the superintendent's press conference, I think they're looking at 500 new hires over the course of the next 2 years, and then the other movements will be within the ranks of officers we already have on the department, advancing from patrolman to field training officer, detective or sergeant, and then sergeants to lieutenants and so on.
Now, I wondered that myself, because they did talk about adding all of these different layers of bosses and other, and obviously, as you're pointing out, sergeants and detectives and all that. Mm-hmm. Now, the question becomes, do they then, because that's going to be from existing ranks, right? I mean, I would assume that you don't want to necessarily, you're not going to bring in detectives from other places. You want to raise those guys up through our ranks, right? Through
the Chicago ranks. Yeah, we don't work that way. You come within our own ranks to get promoted, outside of the foreign hires that they brought in for executive positions, recently and in years prior. When you're a detective or a sergeant or a field training officer, you come from within the ranks of the Chicago Police Department.
So one of the questions was, how does the city pay for it? I know that's not something you can field. It's over $100 million, but do you feel that, Dean, overall this makes our streets safer with this increase in police officers if they are in fact on patrol, in the neighborhoods?
Well, the overtime initiative has been around that amount of money as well. So the cost of hiring is already here, it seems, with the overtime that they've or overtime expenditures that they've utilized over the last couple of years to bring officers back on their days off. So what's nice about having new bodies fill those positions is that you also have individuals contributing to the pension. And you have individuals that are filling beat cars as opposed to just taking a different beat car out in a different part of the city. And I think the presence and the perception of more officers being on the street can do nothing but assist in diminishing the crime. But it's, this isn't, superintendent said it before, I've said it before, this is not a police problem. This is not a situation we can arrest our way out of. This is something that the politicos and the resources are going to have to, and the communities are going to have to address.
Todd, what do you think about that, as far as having more squad cars, more having more police on the streets for addressing this?
I think he answered his own question, answer your question rather, by saying this is something we can't arrest our way out of. So adding more police officers in of itself is not going to solve the problem, is what we would expect them to do, is then arrest people. I think the core issue is one of culture, and culture can be solved by leadership. Like Eddie Johnson has gone actually above and beyond as it relates to most recent superintendents in terms of punishing individuals who go outside of what they believe to be protocol. I think when you have sergeants, when you have more commanders, when you have more superintendents who are willing to punish individuals who do something that's outside of what's prescribed, what's expected, mm-hmm. That's when you get the changes in behavior and culture. But until you change the culture, no matter who you put into it, it's 1,000 or one, it's still going to result in the same sort of outcome.
Well, I want to thank our listeners so much for joining the conversation. We have Mark Carmen after this, and we can continue that conversation after that. I want to talk Cubs and Bears just a little bit. I know. We got a little bit of that.
I'm with it.
And we are hanging out with Todd Belcour, who is the adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago. He is a director of social change. He has a film festival this weekend, and it's at the Icon Movie Theater at 150 West Roosevelt Road, starting Friday, going through Sunday. These are movies from around the world that are a call to action. Participate, be a part of the movement, understand and empathize. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I want to get right to Carm, who's been on the line. Thank you so much for hanging out, Carm. I didn't mean to bump you.
Patty, I do not feel bumped.
Well, you've been having this important conversation as well, as far as protests go, what it means to question, to have the conversation in this country. And I'm inspired by what you've said. So thank you for being patient.
My pleasure. And it was enjoyable to listen to you tonight. And I, there's some stuff swirling around the sports world, too. There was a memo sent from the NBA offices to the players about how they want to partner when the season starts, which is coming around now. Training camps are going to open up fairly soon. And how they want to expand on the message that a lot of people are doing today from an athlete perspective. So it'll be interesting what the NBA, how they partner with their players. It's pretty fascinating.
Here's Todd Belcourt, by the way. You guys should meet sometime. I don't know if you have.
Hey, Carl, I'm sorry about the delay there.
That's okay, Todd. Good to hear you.
You know, I mean, this is pretty significant. Is there any precedent for this in sports history, as far as you know?
Well, I mean, you go back through sports time. I mean, sports has always, in some way, shape, or form, been at the forefront of change, right? I mean, from
look at Jesse Owens. Jesse
Owens from Jackie Robinson.
But we're talking beyond that, though. Here, it's a little different. It's like the formalized partnership between the people who run the whole organization and the people who may be dealing with the stress and trauma of it, you know, firsthand, going hand in hand, deciding to do something about it together. I've never heard of that. That's pretty incredible in my mind.
I see where you're going with it. Yeah, no doubt. It's just a very interesting time and a lot of mixed messages out there, in my mind at least. It's, you know, people feel that you're disrespecting the country by doing something around the flag. And, you know, the athletes are saying over and over again that it's not about disrespecting the flag or people that have served the country. It's, you know, it's obviously the military, especially the military, and police officers as well. But it's about, you know, a much larger message. And it's interesting to me that the NFL, who, you know, if you don't tuck in your jersey or if you wear a collar on your uniform that is not regulated by the league, they'll fine you.
That's right.
But the NFL has stood back here. I find that fascinating. And the NBA, obviously a tremendously predominant African-American league, this is a huge opportunity for Adam Silver, the commissioner, and the Players Association. And it's very cool that they're embracing it. You know, a lot of people ask the question, you know, to what end? What's going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what's going to happen. But they want to lend their voice to the conversation of making the world a better place. And I just think that's cool.
I'm with you on that, and I'm glad you're reporting that, because that's something I hadn't heard about until you mentioned it today.
Carm's on it.
Carm on a cutting edge, I'm telling you. Worth the wait.
Carm, was the Cubs game tonight?
How was the Cubs game, Carm?
Oh, the Cubs are just, you know, the best thing that's ever happened to baseball.
Since 2005, you mean?
Yeah.
When the Chicago team won it.
Oh, dear Lord. Don't make me throw things at you. Here's a
good job, Todd. Hey, listen, you know, 2005 is nice, but the three-peat that's coming on the north side is going to be a little bit better. But, yeah, they got to win one first.
Todd was rolling his eyes. He's like saying we have the possibility of legacy. We're just saying.
No, you've got a killer team. There's no question. I mean, from top to bottom, you've got no hole. So it's just whether or not you get the clutch hitting you need to beat the teams you struggle with throughout the year.
Wow, right. Well, look at him going
there's no doubt
into the weeds.
There's no doubt about it. Did you hear the word that Theo used around it the other day? He said, this is not a meritocracy. Do you guys know what that means?
You know what? I had to get out of my car before, because I know that one listener, so I was trying to decide what a meritocracy was, and it's that, you know, you are rewarded based on your ability.
Your performance, yeah.
On your performance.
Right, right. I mean, so you guys are smarter than me. That's cool.
No, but you had a listener who was merit.
But why would he say that? They've got like the best team on paper in the last 10 years.
I mean, well, he was saying,
I get it. Like they're not going to win automatically just because they're talented on paper.
Because it comes down, can you rise to the challenge? I'm sorry, Carm. I was listening to your show. It was excellent.
Thank you, Patty. I was asking him, do you guys feel like you're the favorite? And he said that, you know, there's no other team that I'd rather go into the playoffs with. But it's not a meritocracy. Like, you don't get awarded the World Series because you've been the best team all year long. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you have to play the best in October, and the breaks have to go your way.
Just ask the Patriots when they played the Giants the other day, right? When they were undefeated up until the point where they got mollywopped by the Giants.
Ooh, mollywopped. Craig, please mark that as the first time that's ever been said on this show. Mollywopped. Thank you.
Well, what does Vegas say, Karam? Are you allowed to talk about that? What are they, 5-1 or something?
Griffin's very upset because my son was following the Cubs' chances of winning the World Series, and he saw it plummet one day. And he's already been banned from following the polling numbers for the presidential election. We told him no more. All of September, you cannot look. And then he was looking at the Cubs' numbers, and it went down to like 21%. Karm, is there?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Theo and them. I don't know if you guys read the piece on Theo that ESPN put out. It's phenomenal. You do have to devote about half your day to read the whole thing, but I guess it's worth it. It's quite long. But you know, they run the Theo algorithmal math over and over again, and they're about a 20% chance to win the thing. So, you know, it can go a million different ways. But the whole point is that they've built a team that should be able to be there and have a great shot at it year after year.
Yeah.
And the way things are aligning this year, I mean, it comes to 3 Cy Young Award candidates, and John Lester's going to win it. And they have 2 MVP candidates, and Chris Bryant's going to win it. I mean, that's crazy.
You think Lester's going to win it?
Yes, absolutely.
It's been incredible, but I wasn't sure if the fanfare was sufficient to get him over the hump.
No, there's votes coming out of whatever people have been polled, and Lester is, I think, a runaway Cy Young Award winner.
Wow,
Who would have knew it last year?
It's so exciting.
Not the last year. I thought I was like, wow, they put the money in the wrong horse.
Well, and there's only, I don't have the names in front of me, I apologize, guys, but there's only a handful of teams that have ever had back-to-back Cy Young Award winners. Arrieta, of course, winning last year, mm-hmm. and Lester to win it this year. Steve Stone and Mike Flanagan did it with the Baltimore Orioles back in 1979 and 80.
Look at Carl with encyclopedic knowledge over
he
there.
He is.
My goodness.
Yeah. You got to be on top of these things, right?
Get it, Carl. Get it.
Before we let you go, how do you recover from a Monday night game watching the Bears with Hamp, OB, and Kaz and hosting that show, running that panel? I don't know. You need some ice packs after that.
What does it seem like to you, Patty?
Emotionally abusive. And not because of them, but because of the game, because of the way this... I mean, already, people are done. They're already done with the Bears. They've already left next week's game. The fans have already left this. They've already left the stadium.
Well, it's great to be with those guys, win or lose.
Yes.
Let me just get that out.
Mostly
there.
Win. Mostly win. So much yelling.
There are disgraces in the NFL that historically have been the Saints back in the day when they were called the Aints, and the Buccaneers used to be a huge disgrace down in Tampa.
The Browns. Currently.
And, you know, more recently, like the Raiders were a disgrace for about a decade. Unfortunately, the Bears have entered that realm.
Yes.
That's where they're at right now. They're just an absolute debacle of an organization.
What does it mean? The meme I saw is, does a bear poop in the forest? No, all over Soldier Field.
Wow. Wow, we're bringing up existential jokes now. That's the next level stuff.
Karm, thank you so much for hanging out with us pretty late. Will you get some rest? When are you back in the... You're back on the air Saturday from 3 to 7 for The Beat.
We're on 3-6 on Saturday. Then there's Northwestern football, a huge game with Nebraska to open up the Big Ten season.
Yeah, that's huge.
And then we're going to have a Sunday extravaganza, 3-6. And I'm going to massage Brian Noonan's back for an hour.
Oh.
And then we're going to do Hamp and LB with Kaz from 7 to 7:30. And then we'll be on after the Sunday night game with the Cowboys.
I hope Hamp's wearing flip-flops again, because that's an image I will never erase from my mind. At least you're rubbing Noonan's back and not Hamp's feet. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you soon. Go Cats.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
ILLINI. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. With me is Todd Belcourt, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, also the director of social change. Comedian Michael Palasek joins us as well. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk a couple later, but right now we have Brandon Weatherby, who has something to tell us in regards to the World Wrestling. Okay, WWE has someone in their Hall of Fame who happens, just so happens to be running for the top office in the world. Hey, Brandon, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. This can't be true. Is he really in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, he's been working with the company for over 30 years. It's great. He's the best.
He's the best. How has his experience in professional wrestling, do you think, sort of shaped the way he runs his campaign? Because it seems to be pretty clear cut, but people aren't seeing it.
Yeah, since he entered the race, everyone's done the wrestling is politics parallel. And that's lovely. That's a nice analogy. David Brooks writes about it in the New York Times, and everyone has it's a great laugh, but all the rubes wrestling each other. Oh, look at these sideshow freaks. No one's actually taken it further. So Chris Kelly and I wrote a book about how Donald Trump is a wrestler. It's in two parts. The first part of the book is about how Vince McMahon, you might know him as the character of Vince McMahon, who is actually, like, you know, the CEO of the company. Their background is very, very, very similar. Some might say the same. And the second half of the book is about how he's run his campaign exactly like a wrestling storyline. And guess what? He's winning. He's doing the right thing and defeated every Republican and everyone I met at the RNC. By the way, thanks for having me on during the RNC.
You were fantastic.
Everyone at the RNC that I spoke to, they all laughed it off. And it's really easy to laugh it off until you realize, oh, the guy that you just made fun of, he's the guy that's running your party now. So keep laughing all you want. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame and he's at the top of your ticket. Deal with it.
Okay.
So you're saying, yeah, like WWE is better for your career than grad school?
They're one and the same. It depends on how you use it. It's no different than the NFL.
depends on how you use it. I love it.
Oh, yeah, same thing. I mean, to just laugh off Peyton Manning as a not future presidential candidate is silly. I mean, he's going to run and probably win in 20 years. That's how this works. I mean, oh, yeah, Ronald Reagan. Oh, what a medium actor. No one cares about Ronald Reagan. He'll never do anything. I mean, this has all happened before. I know I sound incredibly insane, but once again, he's at the top of the ticket. So,
and it's still hard for me to wrap my mind around this. But you know, people say, this guy is there. What was it? Someone said that he's the worst idea America's ever had, right? But but here's the thing: Americans are drawn to him. So, what are we upset about? Are we upset about him, or are we upset? Or confused by the draw that he has?
Both. You could be upset with both. At the end of the day, one or the other. There's a lot of reason to hate and or like a man. Most things are complex, but this one's really not. He's a brilliant opportunist who is running for the exact same reasons why Vince McMahon and how he runs his company. It's just, how do you make the most money? How do you make the most noise? How do you get the most heat? That was built down to. The good thing about Donald Trump is if you don't believe what he says and you really want to make a social change, figure out a way to become a correspondent on Fox News, praise Donald Trump, and then slip in your political agendas that he will follow in order. Wow. He has no – that's it. This is always – like if there is no advisors. It's just one man watching television and reacting accordingly. So that's – he's really playing this – or any ideals. There are no ideals in wrestling. There are no ideals in the Donald Trump presidency. It's just what's going to get the most attention, what's going to shine the light the brightest, what's going to make the most money.
So, well, go
ahead, Michael.
So, like, wrestling does it because it's, like, a good story and entertainment. So, like, why is he doing it?
Also a good story.
You got to have a heel and you got to have a face. You got a good guy face and a heel bad guy. Well, yeah. Politics, no one cares about the face. No one cares about the good guy. That's silly.
Like the wrestling gets a lot of money because people like the story or whatever. But like, Trump's not going to make a lot as president. Is he going to like change the world he's richer?
About being president. That's the thing. This has never been about being president.
Yeah.
Never once Donald Trump really wanted president. Donald Trump wanted to ride down a gold elevator and launch a hotel and have a half-hour press conference at his hotel in Washington, D.C., I don't know, four blocks from the White House.
Gotcha.
It's always been a long con to sell hotels have gone a little bit too far, and now he's course correcting, and that's why there's all this talk about a network. That's why Roger Ailes is part of the campaign. This is not to win an election. At this point, this is to launch the Trump network, sort of like how the WWE has a network.
Wow.
Once again, I know I sound insane. Once again, not for the first time, not conspiracy theories. These are all facts.
But it seems like a lot of people are all in on Donald Trump. So if it's just for the Trump channel, then what happens if he wins?
Oh, if he wins, he'll do exactly what he said, what everyone around the Kasich campaign said what he's going to do. Pence will run the country, and he will make America great again. Here's something that no one except the Washington Post picked up. The day after the 2012 election, the one that he pretended to not support Romney on, but he supported Romney on, he trademarked the phrase, America Great Again. This is just a commercialism at its finest. He's a brilliant man who knows how to sell a T-shirt and knows how to sell a hat. The difference between Austin 316 and Trump Make America Great Again is one's on a hat and one's on a T-shirt. At the bottom line is they make products overseas and they want to sell those products to make themselves richer. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just you probably want that guy running your country. Maybe you do. I don't know. That's your call. You're your own informed voter.
Well, look, I mean, Donald Trump came, and like right here, with we have Pence, who was the governor of Indiana, right? Right in Gary, Indiana, Donald Trump came in 1993 and said he was going to turn Gary, Indiana around. That worked out well. I mean, like, surely if he can turn an entire community around, he can do that for the country, right? How is Gary, Indiana doing? Anybody?
I played baseball there one time. It wasn't too bad.
On my GPS, when it says, when I'm going through Gary, it goes, seriously? Drive quickly. Yeah, so I mean, everything he does has that oomph, that sort of bravado of slamming a folding chair over somebody. Which, by the way, when you mentioned that hotel in D.C., when that stage collapsed, was it because it was a collapsible stage, kind of like a folding chair that you hit other wrestlers with?
No, WWE performers no longer do headshots because that's bad for the skull and that's bad PR. And WWE is actually more socially responsible than the NFL. Wow. And it's okay to say that because the Bears are 0-2 and no one cares.
So how are people reacting to your book? I mean, on its face, it seems just as bombastic as probably the Trump campaign, but it may be fitting in that regard. How are people reacting to
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. It's met with the exact same amount of like skepticism because it's like, oh, wrestling, you're a bunch of idiots. And I understand that. I completely understand that. But if you look at the background, the racial background of like, you know, who watches this product, the amount of reach it has, it really shouldn't be dismissed so easily. And the amount of actual social justice that they do is kind of great. Right now they're in this campaign for counter-cure. It's about childhood cancer and stuff like that. It's like a nice, noble thing to get behind. Mm-hmm. Sort of like how the NFL has Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I mean, it's really no different than any of that stuff. And how it relates back to the book is anytime I get more than 5 to 10 minutes to talk to somebody in the political realm about this, they're like, oh, I didn't know about that, or, oh, I just dismissed her, or, oh, I know that analogy, but it goes much, much further than the analogy. It hasn't changed in the last 18 months, and thus far, it's not going to change. I mean, this has come up time and time again about a pivot. There is zero reason to pivot if your character is working. It's the same as wrestling. Stone Cold Steve Austin doesn't go back to right. being the other guy he was before. He's no longer a blonde member of a tag team. He is Stone Cold because that gimmick is working. Why would Trump change his gimmick? There's no incentive.
Oh, I agree. There's no reason to. I mean, and is anyone expecting him to?
Yes. Still.
Who?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, still. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're on campaign manager number three.
Party establishment.
Look, I and this goes into other elements of, you know, this campaign and why Republicans are having a tough time, because didn't Priebus just say, if you're not all in, we will work against you getting your office if you're running for representatives or for senators?
Yeah, because he's doubling down, because if he wins, he looks like a genius. And if he loses, he loses anyway. There's absolutely no incentive for him to be a calm, rational human being. I mean, the way Kasich is running everything right now is he is setting himself up for 2020. He's the only one that's really doing it well. Hell, Ted Cruz had like a reasonable week in Congress. When does that happen? That hasn't happened since 2020. He's not getting behind his guy right now. There's no incentive for relatively normal, rational people to get behind this man unless they actually believe in him or they see a business opportunity.
Well, what I've seen from Trump as he really takes a full-on assault in trying to get into the black community is just saying whatever people want to hear. I mean, do you think any of that will have any negative backlash in terms of maybe his more base supporters, in terms of making opportunities for people of color and doing something to make sure people of color are protected against racism and other issues like that.
Do you think that people believe in things like birth certificates?
How crazy was that? No, I didn't. She did. And by the way, I'm sorry. I don't want to go off on a rant because it's not Thursday. We're not talking about Hillary, but we are talking about Trump. And when he said she started it, she started the birther thing. She didn't, and her campaign didn't. It was like some like fervent fan of hers in 2008. I think it was like a judge who filed that paperwork who was just a fan of hers and wasn't part of the campaign. But because he was a supporter, I'm sorry, I just went off on the thing.
No, but that's the point. That's the point. He's a heel, and that's what a heel does. There's this famous essay from Roland Barthes, the French philosopher. It's in the book about how what a Basque role is, what a heel's role is. And it's to use the rules whenever it's to their advantage, and then complain about the rules when it is not to their advantage. That's all this is. He is still consistent. He is a heel wrestler. I know this sounds crazy and blah, 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 but he is maintaining a character. And what did you just do? You got upset, and then you just said Hillary and birther in the same sentence. So if you're subconsciously paying attention, if you want to believe that there is still a conspiracy, that's how you plant that seed. Kellyanne Conway and Donald Trump are brilliant people, and to just dismiss them as a bunch of liars is easy. And to normalize him by putting him on late night television is easy. Look at a weirdo with the orange skin and the weird hair. Let's all rustle his hair and laugh. No. That's
right.
Brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. He's a brilliant heel wrestler.
Do you think he would be yielding this sort of overwhelming support, even giving this sort of momentum, given this heel position, if he was running against a Bernie Sanders or a Joe Biden or something like that?
Oh, yeah, for sure, because the problem with the Democratic Party is it's way too nuanced. They're horrible on message. The Republicans have got it down since Reagan. I mean, the fact that Carter lost at all is absurd because he couldn't stay on message because he seemed weak. That's absurd, and nothing's changed. And I'm 33, and my entire life the Democrats have been horrible on message. Why would this be any different?
So do you think your book appeals mostly to, like, political people or to, like, wrestling fans?
A little bit of both, but honestly, every
human beings,
know, they're like, we are, yeah, pretty much every human being ever with eyes.
That's a not nuanced at all way
no.
to get out there.
We were talking to Brandon Weatherby, who has written The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You can go to DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com. And you write here that in this on the first page here of the website that he can turn a debate, almost turn into a cage match. What do you think about Monday night? What are your thoughts on?
It's going to be so great. This is what's going to happen. He'll say a bunch of lies. She won't be able to call him out because she'll use nuance. And then he'll say he won. And then a lot of people go, oh, yeah, he won. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be great. The only way for her, I know that once again, I have to preface everything by saying, I know this sounds silly, but the only way for her to actually win on Monday or any future debate is if she takes the tactic of Rowdy Piper. Rowdy Piper, a lot of people might know, is the actor from the great film They Live. He's also known as a wrestler. He was Hulk Hogan's main element in the glory days of wrestling in the 80s. One of his catchphrases is, just when they think they have the answers, I change the question. That's what she needs to do with these debates.
Why can't Brandon Weatherby be a consultant? Can you do political consulting?
Yeah, I can, but I don't want it because that's silly. Politics is for dummies. I like watching wrestling with a bunch of people.
You can be honest with us. Did Trump hire you to write this book?
I wish. I really wish. I talked to the Trump people. I talked to a lot of these people at the campaign. Most people don't know what's going on. I talked to Linda McMahon at the convention on the floor. She's like, yeah, we're friends. I mean, she ran for Senate twice. She knows what she's doing. She was on the Rules Committee.
Right.
How is that not the biggest story?
Yeah, that's
like,
crazy.
Like, the woman that understands, you know, how everything is predetermined in wrestling, she's on the Rules Committee. Are you listening to me?
Wow. Oh, we've been hanging out with Brandon Weatherby. You can find his book. How do people find your book again? I just mentioned it, but you tell us.
DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com. I can't believe that no one took this URL before us. It's so obvious.
It is incredible. Brandon, can we check in with you next week? Every Wednesday we do Trump trackers. Let's check in with you again and see how you felt about the debate.
Yes. Well, you're going to have a lot of fun in the next 4 years.
I don't talk about Trump except on Wednesdays. Are you back in town anytime soon?
Yeah, in theory. We'll see how the flights work out.
Well, we'd love to see you again.
Jeez.
And where else can people find you?
Just go to the website. Buy my book. It's a thing that was made famous by the hit television show The Critic. That one was from Michael Palasek, and no one else in the room might want to. Yeah, just go to DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com. It's all there. Thank you for having me on the show.
Always.
I want everyone to know I have a degree in political science. I don't just make all this stuff up, and it's not just a bunch. This is not a pamphlet of anything. It's a book. There are sources.
You don't have to justify yourself.
No, it sounds great.
It does. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's Brendan Weatherby. Go to DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com. More with my guests when we come back on 720 WGN. I think we did our Trump trackers. I think that has a count. We did enough Trump for one night. There's not much more to say, is there, Todd? Michael?
I didn't listen to the first part of the show.
No, that was it. That was,
oh, that was it? Oh, yeah.
We only did Trump on Wednesdays. Yeah, that was a lot of Trump.
I was amazed at how, I don't know, it's such like a fun idea for a book, how like solid he was behind it. Like, that was...
Oh, Brandon knows so many things.
Yeah, he knows a lot.
He knows all the things. Coming up after the news, define yourself by three fictional characters. Do you have yours locked in, Todd?
You know I'm working on it.
Michael?
I'm working on it.
Esmeralda, have you worked on this yet?
Oh, gosh.
Craig?
I've thought about it.
No? All right. 312-981-7200. What are the three fictional characters that would describe you best? And we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Thank you so much for finding us. We are on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful evening. I know that we are entering the, is it the fall equinox? Is it already happening? Where you can,
wow,
you can balance an egg or something? Skilling says it's totally a myth, by the way. Joining me is comedian Michael Palasek, who has a fundraiser this Saturday in Peru, Indiana. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's Peru High School. It's my high school that I went to, and then two other high schools. They're all putting on this thing to benefit their booster club, and you can get tickets at the athletic offices of my high school, Wabash High School in Wabash, Indiana, or Peru High School in Peru, Indiana, and it's 7 p.m. on Saturday. Just show up at Peru High School.
Just show up.
Yeah, I'll be performing.
There's no fancy schmancy stuff. Just show up.
Just be there, and I'll be performing. The last time I performed there, I did basketball in high school, so this is my first
stand-up
comedy
home?
Show. Yeah,
oh, wow.
in that high school.
I don't know
is
if
there
I
a
do
website
that.
Or something like that?
There's
show up. He
I
said
I tried
show
to
up.
Find their website. There was no website. All the information I've seen on the internet was like, hey, when the football game's going on, stop by the athletic department and get pick up tickets. The theater's like 800 seats, so I'm pretty sure if you just show up, there'll be room for you.
Is it the, it's in the auditorium?
It's in the high school auditorium.
Don't you wish it was in the basketball, like on the court, like in
well,
the gymnasium?
Yeah, they had it's called the Tiger Den. Like, this is the other high school, and it was like a really cool basketball thing. But I don't know if you've ever done shows in a basketball. I think you have to have the acoustics be really good, so I'm kind of glad that it's not in the...
That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent point. Also joining us is adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, Todd Belcore, who is also the director of social change. He has a film festival this weekend, so if you can't make it to Peru, Indiana... Mm-hmm. Well, you could also
make
you could
both.
Do both.
Yeah, yeah. The show's at 7, come back.
Well,
yeah.
It's all weekend, too, for the film festival.
Come back, we've got receptions, and the next day, and the next day. We'd love to host you.
Immerse yourself in experiences you might not otherwise be able to expose yourself to understand, to perhaps participate.
Yeah, so
in meaningful
all you
ways.
Peruvians from Indiana, come on through.
Yeah. You know what? I say that Michael is the Pied Piper of Peru, Indiana. Tell him to follow you all the way back to Chicago.
Sounds good.
Do all, you know, just participate.
Yeah.
Todd Belcore joins us, and I have been playing. I played this little game. Look, yesterday was a very intense night watching the coverage, and I can't let myself get sucked into social media and the anger that people have at each other rather than the conversation. I mean, there are a lot of people, when someone pleads for justice or please, you know, let's make things right. I just have to, and then someone gets angry at them. I can't. So then I go play little games. I play little social media games. Every once in a while you have something like Throwback Thursday or you have whatever it is, some silly little thing. And yesterday it was basically define yourself using three fictional characters. And I've assigned that to our listeners, to Michael Palasek, to Todd Belcore, to producer Craig Collins, and to Esmeralda Leon, who is back from Boston, by the way. I think you need to pick someone from Boston. You have to just pick like a Matt Damon from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
How do you like them apples? How was Boston, by the way?
It was so much fun. I really loved it. I went a few years ago, and I really love the city when I visited the first time, and now I love it even more.
Oh, very cool.
Because it's so great. It's very much like Chicago, I feel.
Does that feel vague to you, too, or is it just me?
No, I feel...
It's
no,
great.
Because there's so
it.
Much.
Because
there's so... There's like a million things I could talk about and then just
well,
take up
one.
All the time.
Give us 10 seconds of it.
The seafood.
seafood.
I know that's a dumb, such a go-to, but seriously, I ate so many oysters.
Oh, wow.
Did you have any lobster?
I did. I had a lobster roll.
Okay.
Because I kind of don't. I had the whole lobster the last time, and right. I was kind of like, it's just a tail and the claws, because the rest is like some weird goo in the middle that I did not enjoy.
Oh, the green stuff?
Yeah.
Yes.
I forget what it's called.
Their digestive tract or something.
Some people like it, some people don't. I wasn't digging it. So I just got a lobster roll, and it was so good.
See, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
It's fresh. By the way, in Philadelphia, the seafood seems to taste better, too. I mean, there is a travel aspect to living in Chicago.
Yeah, just learned.
Maryland, for sure.
Yeah, I learned I love Eastern, East Coast oysters.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's all we were eating. Eastern at first.
We should go out.
There's part of the East Coast.
There's a Shaw's Crab House has some good. There's a couple places that have really good oysters, by the way, around here. So we should go out sometime. There's
I know my stuff now.
There's an oyster. Did you try some of the champagne ice? Do they have that anywhere?
No. What's that?
Yeah, there's an oyster house here that has champagne ice that you. Oh yeah. What are you looking at me like that for?
I feel like you just made all that up.
What do you do with it?
Definitely. No.
Are you talking about like ice cubes made of champagne?
Yeah.
Oh my Jesus.
Well, isn't that just, don't they just pour it in an ice cube tray and then freeze
right.
it?
No, but charge no, it's like dollars for it.
It's like a little chipped ice. No, it makes a difference.
But doesn't alcohol freeze at a different level?
I think champagne is a little more watery. Like, I think that some like this. Yeah.
Now wait, are you just eating it?
The ice? No, you put it with you kind of put the chips on with the oyster and you have them together.
Oh, I did.
So it's like champagne and oyster.
Mm-hmm. I did have a place that had a Prosecco and lemon whatever they call that stuff you put on the oysters.
Accoutrement. I don't know what they
I forget what it's called. It's called something.
The hand wiggle.
The hand wiggle. Because she was drizzling.
She's doing, right? Yeah. She's doing the drizzling motion for those
drizzle.
Who can't see it.
I think they should call it the hand wiggle. Esmeralda, do you have your three fictional characters? Or do you want some more time?
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt real quick. Yes. A guy just walked by the studio, and usually I've seen the shirt before. We had a shirt that said, I pooped today, which I've seen before. But
a comedian, Jimmy Wiggins, had that.
Oh, is that his shirt?
His hat. Yeah. He has a hat that says,
He
has a hat that says, did you poop today?
Gotcha.
Oh, it's not a question.
It's a past tense. I just imagine him being like, I can wear that shirt today. Like that he decided.
I hope everyone can wear that shirt every day, because if you don't, get that checked out.
Yeah.
This is the studio. That's it's a nature fact. Of being in the studio. It's that kind of thing.
You're distracted.
You have to comment on that.
Yeah.
I agree.
That was my moment.
You have to be in the moment. Be here. Say yes and.
Mm-hmm.
We're stalling for you, Esmeralda. So you better.
No, I only, and this is so dumb because everybody has this one. I only have Liz Lemon so far because I connect with her so much. Every time I watch that show, I'd be like, yes, you and me too.
Do people of color watch that show besides you?
Hey, it's funny.
Because I had never heard of it. I thought it was Don Lemon's sister or something.
30 Rock?
Tracy Morgan's in it.
Don Lemon's Latino sister. Nice.
Salma Hayek was on it. Oh, she was so good on that show, too.
Yeah, she was. She was
That's
very
all I got.
What do you have? No, what do you have so far?
Sherry Shepherd.
Just Liz Lemon.
That's it.
Just Liz Lemon. Okay. All right.
No, and then the guy who was.
She's making something up right now.
No. What's his
name? One of the writers was from Harvard. Was black. Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
Twofer?
Well, actually, Twofer. Hannibal Buress was a writer on the show, and he was on it as well.
But Twofer was in the show, and he was a person of color.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But then there was...
You identify with Hannibal Buress?
Completely forgettable, you see what I'm saying?
I identify with Hannibal. No.
Completely forgot him.
Just trying to name all the people of color on 30 Rock.
Yeah, you've got a lot of...
Tracy Morgan's bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
No, the guy who's... Oh, man.
See?
He's Sherry Shepherd's friend... And he's in the reality show.
Oprah was on 30 Rock.
I don't remember.
For an episode.
I didn't watch 30 Rock.
Really?
Yeah, no, I didn't watch. I watched like the first season.
That was my jam.
That was your jam?
Well, I watched The Office, 30 Rock, Parks and Rec. That was like the best night of TV for me.
I don't know why.
Back in the day.
I stopped watching half-hour comedies a while ago.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Well, you should watch the second season on. All right, 30 Rock, the first one.
I shall do that. So I love Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin nails it, and Jack McBrayer.
All right, I'll do mine then. So my three characters. So here's the thing. I love Wonder Woman, so that was without a doubt. By the way, Linda Carter as Wonder Woman, because she is Latina. She's Scottish and Mexican-American, so I identify with that. But also, just, wants to do the right thing. Also, Laura Ingalls. Melissa Gilbert as Laura Ingalls. But even the character, I read every single one of those books. I always imagine myself being on the prairie, you know, working hard with my family. But also the third one is Scarlett O'Hara from Gone with the Wind. A little narcissistic, willing to do whatever it takes to get things done. So I like to think that I'm a blend, because you guys were wondering if you pick somebody that's bigger than life, well, then you counter that with your flaws.
Yeah.
And so my flaws are that. That I will stop at nothing to take care of my family and myself.
Nice.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, even though Rhett Butler said that to her. And also, like, being misguided when it comes to love. I was like that in high school and college.
So yeah.
Those are my three.
Was that Laura Ingalls Wilder? Was she ever in love?
Oh, yeah, with Manny, with Monzo. Okay. Monzo gotcha. Wilder. Yeah.
Gotcha.
She was married. Okay. Esmeralda's laughing. Yes.
That was before.
I know her husband's name.
Yeah, I just, you're such a fangirl for Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Hence the braids. If you take a look at my Facebook page at Patty Vasquez, you'll see the pictures and you go, yeah, I could see that.
So she was a kid in the show, right? But then she grew up?
They shot a made-for-television movie, Big House on the Little Prairie.
I'm going to need to know which version of you, version of her you are.
I would say somewhere around probably like season 3 or 4.
Okay.
I mean, there was an episode with Nellie Olson pretending like she was paralyzed because...
Wait, like she was an actor pretending paralyzed, or like she actually was paralyzed
Nellie
in the
Olson,
show?
Nellie Olson, whose parents own the Mercantile down in Walnut Creek, downtown. She blamed Laura's horse for paralyzing her. Only Laura realized, and she felt so badly for her, that she was taking care of her. And then she saw Nellie wiggle her toes, and she realized she was faking. So Laura actually was taking her for a walk in her wheelchair and shoved her down a hill to prove that Nellie could walk. So,
and
yes.
That's the one you identify with the most.
That brings us back to Scarlett O'Hara.
Don't
right
try
there.
To scam Patty.
Don't
She'll
play.
Push you down a hill.
I will push you down. Take advantage of me. I will push you down that hill.
And you see the way she set it up too. Oh, yeah. No, I'm taking care of you. You're chair, no worries. Oh, yeah. It's a hill? Yeah. No, I'll get you down there. Yeah.
You playing me?
Now you're paralyzed.
Now you're doing cartwheels down the hill. How do you feel about that? Yeah. That's what you get from messing with Patty. Yeah.
Let's find out Louise. Your three fictional characters when we come back.
Raise my horse insurance.
Whatever it takes. Let us know your three fictional characters on 720 WGN. It's 312-981-7200. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I just showed a story to adjunct professor of law, Todd Belcour. He's at the University of Chicago. I just showed him a story. Does this circumvent everything we've been talking about? Define yourself in three fictional characters? That there were police officers suspended for not reporting the killing of a woodchuck on a golf course?
You know, it's just really hard to grasp for people who thought it was also a fallacy. There's a legitimate report from a legitimate news network that says that a police officer was being suspended outright for killing a woodchuck.
Yep.
And it actually harkens me back to a film that we saw that was actually about the uprising in Syria and about these folks who were doing everything they can to defend their family and using whatever they had in terms of guns or whatever, and how people didn't care about them, but they had a pet cat. And if anything were to happen to that cat and they put some footage on it and brought it out to the world, then all of a sudden there'd be an outcry. And it's a perfect analogy in my mind. I mean, when you have unrest against your own people in your own country, but you treat folks or animals in some regards better than those who are citizens, I think that's a problem. I think that's something that it's funny to see a woodchuck, you know, getting the most grand sort of protections by the law. But at the same time, you wonder, why don't those same protections carry over to everyday people?
It's a startling. I'm sorry, Michael, we were going to talk about something else,
no.
But this came across my face when, you know, you scroll through things. Again, there are two police officers, and I can't say the name of this town correctly. Rensselaer? Thank you. Where's Rensselaer?
Is it in Indiana? There's a Rensselaer in Indiana.
Is it? This can't be in Indiana.
It's like an hour and a half from here.
Two city of Rensselaer.
Yeah, Rensselaer.
Rensselaer. Uh-huh. What, do we know the origin of this name of the town?
I feel like French. It sounds French to me.
Let's try to treat this like a spelling bee. You either know how to say it.
It's already ridiculous in contrast with what we're talking about in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. Two city of Rensselaer police officers were suspended Monday without pay because they failed to disclose to their superior officers an investigation by the Troy Police Department. Does that sound like it's also Indiana, Troy?
It might be. It might be Michigan. Yeah.
This is all very, and it's so weird because this isn't being reported as like in contrast. This is literally just
news.
And the officers were on paid administrative leave since city officials learned about their alleged responsibility for the killing of a woodchuck during a I can't say it.
Maybe it's spelled differently.
No, Rensselaer.
Rensselaer.
She could still say it the same way either time, though.
Yeah.
I know. Rensselaer Police Benevolent? Am I saying that correctly? Police Association Golf Outing, July 29th at Freer Park Golf Course in Troy. It's just so bizarre. They had faced the possibility of being fired subject to the outcome of the investigation.
Wow.
And this isn't even something that firing doesn't even seem to rise to the level of the incidents we've had across the country with police shootings.
You know, and that's why I applaud Eddie Johnson, because he's actually been willing to relieve people of their duties. He's been willing to fire people for acting outside of their prescribed conduct. And at the end of the day, I mean, this is cruelty. You know, if you're shooting a defenseless animal, a defenseless human being, or someone who has no weapon, or that means no ill will, I mean, that's at its base how we should be considering it. And I think that's something we're missing as we talk about different debates about whether this happens to black people disproportionately or this also happens to white people, so let's ignore it. There's an issue where people are being killed who shouldn't be. And are we going to do something about that or not?
Yeah, I don't, I'm sort of flabbergasted because we don't, I mean, is it because the police department felt like they were being publicly humiliated, or it reflected on them that these police officers? And here's, do you want to know how they killed the woodchuck?
Well, I heard they thought he was carrying a gun, right? It was really a book. Is that what it was? Did I mix up stories?
Yes. What they did was these two police officers are accused of using a golf cart to chase the woodchuck around the course until it was exhausted, and then they ran it over.
Oh, geez.
For fun, for funsies. This is bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay. So three fictional characters that define
not
you.
A clean pivot, but a pivot.
I'll pivot. I'll pivot
like
a little
speaking
bit.
Speaking of cruelty, Todd, tell me about your three fictional characters.
Craig, did you figure out your three fictional characters that define you?
You know, you said Wonder Woman. It's hard to not go with superheroes. I think maybe Spider-Man is one that I think I could. And then Pikachu? I'm going to go with Pikachu. I know that's not a superhero, but I think Pikachu's cool.
Let's stop with Spider-Man. Yeah, what are the characteristics of Spider-Man?
Spider-Man is a nerdy kid who all of a sudden gets superpowers, and I think as a kid growing up, there were times when I was studying and stuff, and I felt a little teased, a little nerdier than other kids, and I probably wish that I got bit by a spider and got superpowers.
And you also excelled at math and things
like
that.
Yeah,
so a little bit of Peter Parker.
I do feel like when I'm in the lobby and he comes to get me, I feel like he just swooped in.
Right?
Just like, let's get in here.
He swoops across the lobby.
Yeah.
It's easier to travel when you swoop in on the web.
It's hard to define. Yeah. It's hard to define characteristics in any one fictional character that I think really encapsulates
why Pikachu,
who I am.
Though, if you don't mind.
Well, I thought because I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Go, that Pikachu was on my brain. Yeah,
I don't. Do you say your own name a lot when you electrocute people?
I do all the time.
Craig.
I introduce myself, and I can't really.
Pikachu
think of a
does
third
that.
One.
Yeah.
That was high level nerd humor, by the way. I got
that's
that.
That was great. It was really
Pikachu
good.
Pikachu says Pikachu before
maybe,
he admits his lightning.
Yeah, that's
maybe
know
Ash.
That's,
maybe Ash then, because he's hunting the Pikachu, and I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Pikachu's cool.
I like Pikachu.
I don't think anyone's picking Pikachu on their.
I used to play Magic the Gathering. Nothing's above my head in terms of nerdiness.
That's great.
You got a long way to go.
Who wants to go next? Esmeralda only had one. Liz Lemon. She's standing
on
that.
No,
that's so Liz Lemon. That's so Liz Lemon. Yep.
You know what Esmeralda's like? That person you tell you're going to McDonald's for an hour, and then when they get to the line, they still don't know what they want. You know,
oh no, I wait to decide.
The menu. You had an hour. You know what I'm saying?
To decide. Do you want more time? I can give you more.
I'm ready. No,
oh, you're ready?
I'm
Let me ready. Tell me yours.
Oh, yeah. Batman.
Okay.
Because it's kind of dual life, so I like to. I'm not nearly as serious as I seem maybe on air. And
we'll
I'm,
find out in about
I'm more
an hour
silly
and a half.
And fun with my friends and family, and people don't believe that I'm a professor or doing high-level stuff, which is kind of interesting. The other is Telemachus from Greek mythology, who was kind of protected from battle. My family's really done a good job to keep me away from harm's way in terms of gangs and violence, and really pushing me to pursue knowledge and education. So that's something that Telemachus was tasked with doing. And then John Henry, you know, working until I can't work anymore. That's kind of my MO. So working until exhaustion.
His are way. I mean, Batman.
Now I feel like a bum.
Well, you have two more to go.
That's so Liz Lemon. So Liz Lemon of you.
You have two more to go, so you're fine. You've got two more to go. Figure it out. You got. I was going to go Medusa, by the way.
Wow.
For not you, for me.
Oh.
No, no, no. It was either Scarlett O'Hara or Medusa.
Please
no,
clean that
no, no, no. It's true. I was going to go for me, Medusa. I'll turn you to stone. Michael Palisade.
Yeah,
she's really misunderstood, though.
I think Rocky, because. I don't know. I just feel like that
as a
stand-up comedian, I the first Rocky, like where he has nothing. Like I feel like that's kind of like most of a comedian's career is like doing that crappy show where you get like a little bit of money and then they take most of it away.
Yeah.
and also, I feel like some of my I watched those movies as a kid with my dad, like, and then I watched them recently. And I was like, oh, that's kind of like that, like innocence. I feel like that's something I held on to my whole life. So that's why that's there. And then Doug. From the cartoon that was on Nickelodeon when I was a kid, because he kept a journal and I like to do that. And then my third one was Murdoch from the A-Team. I just
Which one's Murdoch? The leader?
He's the pilot.
All the white dude.
Yeah, he's the
with the cigar.
No, that's Hannibal. Face is like the good looking one. Murdoch is the pilot who's always in the like insane asylum. They have to break him out.
He was like the funnier one.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does voices and stuff. My girlfriend's watching it a lot right now, and I just feel like...
I'm like, this is before your time, yeah, man. What you going to tell me about it?
on TV right now.
It's on Netflix. I watched it as a little kid, and I feel like he's got like a profound like silliness about him that he commits to a lot, and I feel like I feel like parts of me feel kind of crazy that people don't get, and so that's part of it.
Yeah,
and it's fun, and I enjoy it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. All right. I like it. More
it was either going to be... Okay.
No. Or what?
Or the Catcher from Sandlot. Those are like my two like funny ones.
I've never seen the Sandlot.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll watch it during the break.
Yeah. Check it out.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, Todd Belcour, whose film festival starts this weekend, Friday. Dancing. I love that you're dancing right now. Tell us the name
of
the...
Who doesn't dance? Oh, I'll push it.
I'll push it. Tell us the name of your film festival this weekend, starting on Friday.
The Chicago International Social Change Film Festival is this Friday through Sunday, and it's documenting 34 films from over 12 countries, different injustices, and giving people opportunity to view the films, talk to the people who are creating the films, and also doing something about the issues showcased in the films. And most importantly, a great time to have some fun and meet some good people. So come on out. It's this weekend at Showplace.com, 150 West Roosevelt.
And I'll be there on Sunday. How do people find out like the sort of the themes of the movies, the titles of the movies, what might you know be more compelling for them individually?
You're right. Chicago Social Change is the website, chicagosocialchange.org. And you just look that up. You just click on the schedule, and then you'll see all the different film blocks. Each individual ticket gets you a block of films, so you watch about 2 hours of films. Usually it's 3 to 4 different short films in a discussion. And inevitably, invariably, every year there's people from all over the world who literally come from wherever to come enjoy the film festival. You kick up some great relationships, have some great conversation, and then meet up for the receptions later and have a good time. So the idea is that not just educate people about the different issues, but to create more relationships necessary to build a movement to solve the issues.
And it's one of those things where when you can see the world through someone else's eyes, through the lens, through their intimate experiences, I think that, you know, perhaps you'll be drawn out. You know, you can be cynical and to not respond, I think on some human level would be difficult for anybody to not go, oh, I never thought of it that way. I didn't realize are just the things that we're looking for in life.
That's right. And that's why we created it. Because, you know, really, at its core, I am a policy advocate. And I've spent significant time in Springfield and other state capitals explaining to individuals who have no familiarity with the struggle of inner city or even agricultural regions about other people's struggles. And the idea is the most efficient way to help people understand what other people are dealing with is to help them see it through their eyes. And once you do that, then if you know what it's like to be scared in a car when a police officer rolls up, you've got your hands at the 10 and 2 and your hands are shaking. Then you can realize that what racism feels like, what it feels like to live through racism is. But at the same time, it's also important to know when people are manufacturing and bringing in fruits and things from overseas, what it's like to have an entire family, entire community decimated in southern Illinois. And I think that's something we all need to take the time and take a step back to really understand so we can really do better about addressing all the issues we have in our country and beyond.
Well, and I think it takes listening to other people's stories to share those moments that we might not otherwise be familiar with. And I know this is, again, we talk about pivoting. Comedian Michael Palasek is in studio with us. He's appeared on Letterman, on Leno, Conan O'Brien. He's been on Ferguson's show. He's had his own half-hour comedy special. And what Michael does, I think, is one of those things where people identify with so much of what you do, sort of the angst or the perspective that people feel, they go, oh, I'm not the only one, right? And that's kind of what you're looking for in the movies, right? Is to say, look, these people have an experience and maybe it doesn't feel immediate, but you can relate. And I think, Michael, you've done that your entire career. You've taken your own story and made it relatable.
Yeah, and I think the difference between like the film festival and what I do is that like my problems don't matter. That's why people are supposed to laugh, because they're like, yeah, that is stupid to worry about that.
Come on, man. But the thing is that, like, you say that, and yet, you know, don't sweat the small stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right? But it is kind of like, but we do.
Yeah. No, I think that's the recognition of humanity in me versus the people watching. Yeah, for sure. It's funny, but like, and comedy does cause change. Like, I feel like
the comedians are the only ones calling the politicians right now on their BS.
Yeah.
It's simply the truth.
I did a joke about the parking ticket situation in Chicago one time about, it used to be that if you parked on the sidewalk, it was $50 cheaper than parking in front of a fire hydrant. So the joke was like, well, just park on the sidewalk if you're running late. And then I got another parking ticket a couple years later, and that was changed.
Good eye, young man.
So
good
it makes
eye.
A difference. If I didn't achieve one
comedy
thing.
Comedy creating change. Thank you, Mary Emanuel.
I have not mentioned this on the air yet. One of my superpowers, I have two. I have two superpowers that I will lay claim to. One are selfies. It's just something I've developed. I have the technique, and it's my thing. Esmeralda, yes? Would you say that's...
Oh, for sure.
Don't vouch for
that's her, so Liz Lemon.
You're still two people short.
I know the lighting. I know the angles. I got the cloth. It's a stupid superpower. And my other stupid superpower is parallel parking.
That's great.
And I am very... Esmeralda, do you feel that you're a strong parallel parker?
I would like to think so, but I don't. I haven't driven regularly for a while. I know that's
it's fine.
Traffic.
I
used to be pretty good at it. I'd be proud of myself when I parallel parked.
I'm so confident in my skills that if someone is sort of struggling with their parking, I'm like, oh my God, please let me park your car. And I make them get out of their own car and park it for them. So I was rolling up at Zany's.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really running late, but I was hosting the Funny Females on Monday night. And on the other side of the street, on the, you know, I was driving southbound, and on the north side of the street, I saw a big spot. Yeah. There was a dumpster, and I wasn't sure if it was going to be, whether it was metered or if it was a loading zone or whatever it was going to be. I thought, I'm going to take my chances. I'll go look at the sign. As I was making the U-turn, and it was a pretty decent spot. I have a Prius, so I knew I could fit easily into the spot.
Yeah.
As I was making the U-turn, a motorcycle backed into the spot, right? And that's fine. And I should have still had enough room to pull in easily. Only he left a lot of room between his bike and the car. And so I pulled up in front, next to the car. And and he gets off his bike and he sees me because he saw me making the U-turn.
Yeah.
And he gave me a gesture that was like, he shrugged. It was like, tough on you, right?
Oh, no.
Yes,
and he doesn't know that you're going to push someone down a hill.
This is what I'm
to
saying.
Prove that they're not paralyzed.
Not do his research.
This is what I'm saying.
Don't
so,
let that smell turn you awry.
So I pull my car parallel to the to the car next that's in front of his bike. And that's my thing, is like I can measure. I like pulled back and I tried to like guesstimate between the dumpster and his bike if I can do this. And I'm like, well, I'm gonna give it a shot. The only thing is
this is gonna end well?
Yeah. I'm excited.
The four of us here. Strong.
So the other thing is this is the first time I've ever parallel parked with an audience, because there's like a railing and it's in front of the Vig. Have you been to the Vig yet? It's a great restaurant on Wells.
No.
And they have outdoor seating.
Yeah. Disclaimer is foreshadowing, by the way.
Yeah.
So I start backing the car up. I angle it and I turn it and I'm getting it so that I'm lining it up with the curb. I kiss the dumpster.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I'm a little bit of an angle. My front end is sticking out a little more than I would like it to.
Yeah.
But I'm in. But I'm not quite sure if the front end's going to be able to line, like, get yeah. out of the bike path. And so I give it one, and I know everyone's looking at me. I'm like, and the guy from the bike is sitting at the cafe.
Right.
No, he's sitting in the cafe looking at me.
Yeah.
And I don't even look at him. I'm just without looking at anybody, I have my hand up. I'm just sort of like turning the car. I pull forward like about 4 or 5 inches in front of the bike.
Yeah.
And I just turn the car off and I get out. And I step out of my car, and the people at the cafe applauded. Now, if there is a great moment in your life to be applauded for, to think that you have a superpower that is parallel parking, yeah. and then to have applause.
Because clearly they doubted you.
I doubted myself.
They feel like, you know what?
In a motorcycle, you touch that a little bit. It could fall right. over. It's
watch
not this, like a bumper.
This is a risk. Plus a depth perception.
Watch her topple this motorcycle. Yeah. Right. They had the cameras on everything.
Everybody was thinking I was... because, and that's the pressure because there is
yeah.
no depth perception
yeah,
with a bike.
You can't line it up.
You can't line it up. You're like, I don't know how much more room. Like, how much is it going to take?
Yeah.
So the thing is, so I get out of the car and everyone applauds. And I want so badly to take a selfie with everybody. But I realize completely destroy the coolness of what just happened.
No, keep the party going.
I wanted you to get
out of the car and just kick over the bike.
I did a little right. bit. I just
to prove I can park here, but I still don't appreciate
still,
the way you
could have made more
made
room.
Every effort to make it difficult for me, so now your bike gets a foot.
I curtsied. I just curtsied and I just walked off. I couldn't
fancy.
Do the selfie. I couldn't do the selfie because I just felt like it would ruin the.
You
coolness.
Should have handed out Zickets.
I did go back late when I went to get my car. The bike was still there, but he had pulled out and moved because he didn't want me backing. Because that dumpster's not going anywhere.
No.
That's a Scarlett O'Hara move.
Yeah.
When you do the curtsy at the end of that. Very
I
fancy.
Did. Thank you very much. I curtsied. Yes. It was very fun. So that was my, I totally forgot about that moment. Mostly because I did not take a selfie with the people who applauded. I mean, yeah. like to parallel park and get applause.
Yeah. I've never had that.
It's, I mean, like I've delivered two babies and I'm pretty sure nobody applauded.
She's a one percenter.
Yeah.
We already knew that, but now it's confirmed.
I'm not a one percenter. It was a great moment. That's yeah. all I'm saying.
It was.
All right then. By the way, before we go to the break, what we were supposed to talk about was Bruce Rauner. Governor Bruce Rauner had his very first. I can't even. This amuses me to no end. He had his very first
Crickets
Facebook
cast.
Live.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Video session.
Crickets cast.
Yeah, a little bit. Do you know who was the first person to do a Facebook video in the House of Representatives?
Mm-hmm. Cruz?
No, in Chicago, in Illinois, in the House of Representatives in Illinois, in Springfield,
state level.
It was not. It was not a legislator. It was someone in the media, someone sitting in the press box.
You. Jeez.
Nice.
Sorry.
I approached the press secretary, Steve Brown, and I was like, "Can I? Do you mind if I do this little thing?" Yeah. During the conversations about the budget this year, I asked him, and he was like, "I guess." And he goes, "As long as I don't get like the conversations behind me." And I had to shoot it.
Whoa. I'm sure that's like the first and last time they allowed that.
No, I don't think so. I did it several times.
No way.
Yeah, I did. I did one. I can show you the video. We have it on WGN radio page. I have it with Representative Martwick.
If you've had a chance to meet Patty, you understand that she gets to do things that other people don't. By virtue of the fact that she just is very sweet and very kind. And you know, she doesn't mean ill will, but it's just, God doggy. You're always going above and beyond everyone else. That's impressive.
Well, the Senate is different than the House of Reps. I've made friends with the press secretary there. And I mean, he gets mad at me sometimes. I've gotten in trouble. I did not know that you could not videotape from the press box. So you can't videotape.
Okay.
But that's what Facebook Live is. I'm confused.
So the Facebook Live has to be facing away from the floor of the House of Reps. So he said I could do it as long as they weren't being caught. So I could interview someone. But
they can still hear the noise in the background. So what's the difference?
I don't know. But I made that happen.
That's
show you the video.
I think it would be possible. I know you could make it happen. But I thought they would have lost their jobs and they've been like the first and last time.
But it was not a press secretary.
No, fair enough.
We had over, for those videos, for those Facebook Live videos, we had over 75,000 people click on that.
Oh, wow. Man.
And for the video, I did Facebook Live of Governor Rauner doing his press conference announcing, I don't think it was the short-term budget. I think it was that they were close to an agreement. It was the May 31st deadline. And he did a press conference. And I couldn't, the reception was kind of dodgy. We had 150,000
wow.
viewers
wow.
of that.
Only in Illinois is being close to a budget. Breaking news.
What is that short-term thingy dingy?
Heaven help us.
Tell me something good. Tell me that.
karaoke ready right now.
Got no time.
Keep singing.
Is what you're known to say.
This is back when music was music.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what happened since then. It is time for Tell Me Something Good. Esmeralda, you got to tell me something good.
For today?
Forever.
For the week.
Whatever
oh, forever.
Want, whatever you want to tell me. Well, for today's good, but you just got back with your boyfriend.
Yeah, I did not murder him.
Jeez. We're going to have to raise that bar a little bit for you next time.
Well, no, you know, I feel
was,
her.
It was our first trip together.
Uh-huh. How does he travel?
Well, it was okay. He gets a little whiny, but it's okay.
Oh.
But I didn't shank him with an oyster.
Wow, I think one of your characters should be from Orange is the New Black. I think that's where.
Yeah, well,
why
you got
a tattoo of that? Like Oscar Pistorius cat.
Oh, God. He's not fictional. So.
Oh. I thought that was an intruder.
I'm sorry. I thought that was an optional criteria. You're right.
Craig, you got something good for us?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I keep talking about Betty in school, and she keeps having great days of class. So, I don't know. That's been a really great thing the last couple of weeks.
There you go. Yeah.
That's very wonderful.
Good. Todd Belcourt, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago.
A lot coming up. You know, I can't be more excited about the film festival this weekend. We have filmmakers from all over the world who traveled to come and take part, and people are as more excited than I could ever imagine. And I'm, you know, teaching. I'm teaching a new Jim Crow and starting Tuesday. And I've got a waiting list that goes for pages. And there's kids in different programs who want to be a part of it. And this Liberty Project, it's really important that we come together, Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, and focus on how do we do something better to make a more transparent, more accountable approach to law enforcement. And so all these things are really developing at the right time, and I can't be more grateful for it.
How can people find out more about Liberty Project?
You know, it's at Todd Belcourt is my Twitter handle, and at Social Change is where we are, at CISCFF. But, of course, on Facebook, we're all over the place here. But really, I mean, this is really a nascent effort to really make sure that I'm using my policy advocacy skills and my bridge-building skills to do something about really what I feel to be the most critical issue of our time. So it's an effort that was recently funded through a crowdfunded campaign, and $15,000 to really fund the effort for the next 6 months, so I can prove to some of the bigger funders that instead of, you know, housing organizations that put 7% of their funding towards their end goal, once you fund someone who does every bit of their energy and money towards the goal that you say you want. So that's the purpose and the hope, and right now it's going well, and I'm grateful for it.
Congratulations. Well done. And Michael Palasak, I'm so happy. Here's one of my good things, is that you were in town. You just told me yesterday. When are you in town again, by the way?
I'll be in town the first week of October.
Okay, so that's in like a couple weeks.
Yeah.
What are you back in town for then?
My cousin's stopping here on the way back to Colorado, and I am here for... I'm in St. Louis the next weekend, and I was in South Dakota the day before, so I'm just going to come here for a couple
Where are your shows listed? Do you have it on Twitter?
Yeah, it's on my Twitter, at Michael Palasak, about my website.
You're going to have to spell that, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Owen Smith. He said Palasak like a Smith or something. I was like, hold on, is that A-L-E-C-E-K?
I was working with Owen Smith one time, who's a comedian from Chicago. I don't know if...
I told an Owen Smith story at the beginning of
the
show.
Is that the white dude that dates black women?
No, you're thinking of Owen... Greg Owens?
Gary Owens.
No, but I told... Owen Smith was a comic I was riding with when we got pulled over. That's a story I told at the top of the show.
North Shore guy. Yeah,
he got all nervous because I was in the car and he thought he was going to get in trouble.
I was working with him and he was putting my number in his phone, and I told him how to spell it, my last name. He's like, oh, that's like a black people name. Like, the way it's spelled is wrong.
How you spell it?
It's my last name is P-A-L-A-S-C-A-K.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just Michael Palasak. But that's not Michael Southside. Like Jordan, like Palasak. Yeah.
I'm trying Southside to think of a way to explain it to people, but I can't.
You said Michael like Jordan Palasak.
I'm not like Jordan, but it's spelled like Michael Jordan. No,
Michael's the part we get, though. Yeah. I need you to help
Michael
us out with that. Palasak.
Yeah.
It's the tough part.
S-C-A-K. It's like science.
S-C-A-K.
Palasak.
The second C is silent. That's what it is.